All right. Got an extraordinary engineer here on Recovery Radio. I love my Tuesday mornings. Yeah, we're listening to theme from Coolie High. Theme from Coolie High. I love that song. Welcome to Enlightened Radio on Recovery Radio this morning. And I'm your host, James Boyd. We're going to be talking a little bit about the past, the present, and the future of an addiction and recovery, and some of the things that, some of the memories that you might have growing up in a community that it was a beautiful time for me. And I think that maybe that song, if you get a chance to pull it up on YouTube, it's the theme from Coolie High. And that's kind of, it highlights my time as a youth growing up in Newark, New Jersey, up in Essex County, and just a lot of things was going on. So I decided to kind of pull that up. And I got in touch with some of my friends from back in the day. And we were all scattered across the United States at this time. What's left of us after heroin kind of disrupted our childhood and came into the community, especially at my age, age 14. And I remember when that movie first came out, I had an opportunity to reflect exactly what that movie was about and how deep it ran. I really didn't get the whole idea of that until some years later, especially now at this time in my life where I'm called to kind of tell my story about addiction. And so that's why when I decided to do this Recovery Radio, and I was given an opportunity by Mr. John Case, who is my engineer extraordinaire. I'm learning a lot about how to podcast and how to operate within the community of the internet. You know, that's a world of its own, and John is certainly, he's really good at this, and so I've been blessed to be able to sit beside him and just take notes and look. You know, he's teaching me a lot, so I appreciate it. yesterday, you know, the teachers are still on strike, and we had the governor of West Virginia to come in a Spring Mills High School yesterday, and I attended that, and you know, some portions of it, just listening to our governor. Yeah, we have a caller who's calling in right now, and we'll get back to that. Hello, caller. How you doing? Welcome to Recovery Radio. Hello, caller. You there?
Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Oh, hey. Hello.
There you go.
Can you give us your name?
Sambo.
Sambo is his name. Yeah, I met Sambo yesterday. Hi, Sambo. How are you this morning? It's beautiful out, huh? Yeah, I appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you calling in to talk about.
No problem, thanks for having me.
Yeah, on Recovery Radio. It was when I spoke with you yesterday. I really don't believe in happenstance, so I believe that we were supposed to meet, and you were supposed to be on Recovery Radio this morning to talk about your life and how drug addiction impacted it. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you in your life to change your life last year?
Last year, my son died.
Hold on 1 second. I think we have an additional caller online. Hold on 1 second. Is someone else on the line?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just hold on a second, and we'll take your turn. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, James. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's all right. No, go ahead, Samson. Is there someone else on the line there?
Yeah, this is Salim.
Hey, Salim. How are you? Hey, Salim, we got
all right. How are you?
So we're able to see. I got an engineer who is extraordinary. Salim, I have another call on the line. I think we're going to do a conference here, and
yes.
So his name is Samson. Samson is speaking right now about something that impacted his life last year. Go ahead, Samson.
All right, sorry for the
Sambo.
Go ahead, Sambo. Sorry about that.
I want to call you Samson because you're strong. Go ahead, Sambo. Talk to us.
Yeah. Last year my son passed away during an overdose on heroin.
Uh-huh. And how old was your son?
And he was 20.
20 years old, and he overdosed on heroin. What area were you in? Was your son in at the time he overdosed? Where was he?
In Martinsburg.
Martinsburg, West Virginia. Okay, Samson, go ahead and tell us, how did that, I mean, I know it changed your life, and I know this must be hard for you to talk about, but I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to share your story with the community. Go ahead.
It's hard every day. Mm-hmm. Some days harder than others, but it's something that happened, and try to talk about it as much as I can.
Do you think it could have been prevented in some way? What do you think about that?
I think it could have been prevented in some way.
How so?
I think if they had better alternatives for them to turn to, I guess, not turn to, but to help them with it, like the legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a heroin addict trying to recover or whatever, marijuana can help with the withdrawals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it seems like, you know, our politicians or whatever, they're always, we're trying to battle it. We're going to put money here. We're going to put money there. But there's never any money and there's never anything done. And it's like they're going after, people with marijuana because it's easy and you can detect it easier, you know, by smell, whatever it is. And you don't see them battling the heroin dealers and stuff so much. I see so much going on. I talk to so many people, you know. It's not just about the heroin. It's about opiate itself.
So we have to kind of educate ourselves. So, you know, I really appreciate you because you have to, it must be painful. I can't even imagine losing a child. But I have lost a lot of friends. And as a matter of fact, on the phone right now is one of my longtime friends. And Salim is going to come and enlighten us about our journey. And when we started Sambo, first of all, tell me, Sambo, how did you get that name? That's your real name, Sambo, correct?
That's my real name.
Yeah. So I would imagine you had to do a lot of fighting and stuff when you were a child coming up.
Yeah.
And explain to people. Yeah. So that's a very unusual name. I see you back there laughing, Celine.
When I would talk to people, I would just pull out my ID. Before I even
because they wouldn't believe that your name was Sambo. Yeah. So
not too many people know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the older generation that knows. Actually, I just told some kids, you know, don't use my name so much if you're doing a project or something, because
it's a distraction for a lot of people.
Kind of offensive.
Yeah, it's kind of a distraction. Yeah, well, I'm not offended at all because my name was Bimbo.
Yeah,
I think Celine gonna no Dumbo because so I got these big
that's
ears.
That's where I got my name.
Okay, well, Sambo, can you stay on the line a couple of minutes? I want to get Celine to weigh in. Hi, Celine, how you doing this morning, man? I really appreciate you calling in because I know where you are. It's like an hour. Yeah. Tell us who you are and how this connection came about with Recovery Radio and James Boyd, and talk to us a minute.
Well, you know, it goes back to when we were young, around what, 12.
Yeah, we
nine,
met
12, 10 years old, like that.
Yeah.
Coming up in the city of New York.
Yeah. I met you when I was 10. I met you when I was 10.
Yeah, so I'm 2 years older than you, so I was 12. And we grew up in the city of New York, left from there, went to Vietnam, 1969, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Came home from Vietnam. We became full-fledged drug users.
Yeah.
Full-fledged drug users. And the drugs that we used back then, I don't know about what they use today, but I know what we used.
Yeah. And what is it that we used? What do you think we used? What we use? Okay, let's go back, Celine, because I think we're leaving out a lot of stuff that's really important for our listening audience. So you and I started shooting heroin at age 14 together, right? Take us, if you will, to the place where it first started and who was there and what happened.
You know what was there? I don't want to, I don't know how to, is it permissible to say
Yes. You can use his first name.
Okay, you remember James.
James, yes.
And, yeah.
Not James Boyd, not James Boyd, but another James, right?
Yeah, another game, mm-hmm. James H.
Yeah.
I'll use it like that. And then I'll use Billy L.
Okay.
And Raymond C.
Uh-huh.
They used to have a little house down over. You remember over there by the White Castle off of, what was that? What's that street where the White Castle is down in North?
Yeah, right off Elizabeth Avenue in that area.
Okay. Well, me and Bookworm went down there with James H.
And Bookworm is almost like Sambo, ain't it? I know Bookworm.
Yeah,
Bookworm.
Yeah.
Sambo, can you? So you're not the only one, Sambo, with challenges with the names.
Yeah. So we went down there thinking that we were going to get some marijuana because, you know, at that time we were smoking marijuana and hash and stuff like that.
And what year was that? What year was that, Celine? What year was that?
Oh, man, what are we talking about? 65,
somewhere around
60,
in there.
No, 60, 65, 66. Because mm-hmm. it was before that. It was just right after the death of my wife.
You saying it was 1866? Because I know you're old, but it was 1866.
No, I said after the death of Malcolm X.
Right after the death of Malcolm X,
Yeah, and Malcolm was killed in 1965.
Mm-hmm. And we were shooting heroin.
We
missed that.
We started and that heroin around that time. And what we used to do, how we started, the guys that introduced us to it, because we didn't know anything about it. They called, at that time, they used to call it, when you first shoot up, they call it a joke.
A joke, yeah. You get a joke. Well,
we give you a joke. And a joke is just a little bit of heroin in the needle if the guy don't give you water and shoot you up with water and take your dope from you.
That's a ripoff.
To do that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to tell you how I felt when I first shot that heroin. When I shot that little joke, the only thing I can describe that to is a man having at least 15 or 20 ejaculation at one time.
Mm-hmm. That's heroin effect.
That's how good it felt to my body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After that, we was chasing that same feeling, and we could never get that feeling again. And then the next thing we know that we were addicted to drugs.
Yeah, okay, Celine, let me stop you. Let me stop you right there and ask you a question, a very important question, because I need for people here on Recovery Radio to get something that they can use. And you said that the euphoria, the effects of the heroin when it went into the body was sort of like having 10 or 20 climaxes for a man. That's powerful, you know. I mean, so that feeling is something that you chase for almost the rest of your life.
That's the feeling, yes. That's the feeling that I believe that everyone is chasing, and a lot of people may not want to identify with that, but it made them feel so good that feeling was so good to me. And I know if it felt that way to me, everybody else that used it felt the exact same way. Now, they may describe it to something else, but I know that they trying to chase that first time that they use heroin.
Yeah, so
never, ever get that first feeling again.
Ever again. And that's when people start to overdose. So Sambo, now, this we're looking at 1965, 1967. So here we fast forward to 2017. And so I hope this will help you, Sambo, when you think about what it is that happened 2018. Well, we're talking 2017. That's when your son passed, right, Sambo? 2017? Last year. And
January 18th.
Okay. January 18th.
July 18th. I'm sorry.
July 18th. And so, let me ask both of you guys a question. Do you believe that heroin addiction is a Sambo first?
I think it depends on the person, because, you know, some people have an addictive nature, personality, and some don't. Like my son, I don't believe he was like addicted. I think he just liked doing it, and he was escaping his problems with it. It helped him escape. And, you know, if he didn't want to do it, he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Kind of things. That makes sense.
Celine, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I'm trying to figure out now. He said that his son wasn't using it, you know, like it almost sounded like he was saying his son was just using it periodically and wasn't addicted to it. But you can become addicted to heroin after you use it over a week. You're going to get addicted to it. And with what they have today, I don't know anything about what they cut it with today, but you get addicted even quicker today. But I want to ask him a question. He said his son was using it like to escape. And how long did your son use the drugs? Every day or once a month or what?
Well, that would be kind of hard. Go ahead, Sam.
That's
Sambo.
The thing. I don't know when he started and how often he did it. Because, you know, I guess, you know, being my son and everything, it was kind of, he didn't tell me he was doing it, because he was actually working with me, with my company, for a while, and I never saw any signs or anything, and I only heard rumors. And, you know, when I would ask him about it, he denied it. But he admitted to, you know, doing pills and marijuana, stuff like that. You know, being a parent, trying to figure out, I think it's kind of hard because, you know, they're still trying to hide it from you. I mean, like me, I smoke cigarettes, and, man, I think I was 35 before I even smoked in front of my own dad.
And, well, it's kind of hard. I don't mean to cut you off, but it's kind of hard to hide heroin addiction. You can't you can't hide that. It got telltale signs for you. And some of it is going to be that a lot of times the guy going to be irritable. He's not going to be able to work well. And then you're going to constantly see him might want to go to the bathroom. If he's going to the bathroom, more than likely he's going to get his fix on so he can come back and work and be straight. Most of the time you can tell by the by facial expression how he's going to look. Because most heroin addicts is going to have a facial expression that is telling you that they're using drugs.
Yeah, yeah, and we call it the dope face.
That's why I don't think he was addicted, per se, because, I mean, he'd be with me 6 to 12 hours a day, and we'd be side by side, and I couldn't, you know, I never saw it. I mean, the only signs that I could see was, you know, the weight loss, because he was a big boy. He was a real big boy. And all of a sudden, he's smaller than me. And that's the only thing I could see. And, you know, I think being a parent, you're in denial also.
Well, that is one of the signs.
I just believe.
Go ahead, Celine.
That is one of the signs too, that when you get on heroin, you would rarely eat. Because we had a friend where we used to call him Fluff, and he used to be a fat guy. We used to call him Fluff.
Yeah.
When Fluff joined us on the heroin in using, Fluff became real thin.
Mm-hmm.
Real thin. Most people will lose weight when they start using that drug.
Yeah. Well, Celine, how long did you use? How long were you addicted?
For me?
Yeah.
12 years.
12 years of addiction, right? And for me, it was probably around 30.
Well, you know, I cleaned up.
Yeah, that's what I want to get to. That's what I want to get to, because one of the things, Sambo, that Recovery Radio, what we bring to the table is the fact that I used heroin for almost a little over 30 years. Celine started off with me, but he was the first one in the group to stop. And when he stopped, he stayed stopped. And that's where we're trying to get to here on Recovery Radio, to highlight the idea that recovery is possible. Go ahead, Sambo.
So my question is, like, I'm still trying to educate myself with all this. Mm-hmm. And so what made him stop? What led him to stop? What led you to stop?
Go ahead, Celine.
Kind of thing.
Weigh in on that really quickly.
Okay. Well, I have to go like this here. First of all, when I came home from Vietnam, I picked back up on using heroin and got more addicted to heroin when I came home from Vietnam. Then what happened is I called myself, I got locked up, went to prison for a while, got out of prison, got married, and I was a little clean while I was in prison. Then I got married to my first wife. Stayed with her for a little while, went back to prison again, and I stayed in prison. The last time I stayed in prison was in 1975.
Why did you go to prison?
4 years.
Why did you go to prison?
Well, what they said, I'm going to tell you what they said, and I know what I'm innocent of. They said that I was, first of all, they said that I sold heroin over at Westside High School, which I lived across the street from Westside High School. In the morning, we used to have what we call a wake-up. A wake-up is that what you need to get you through the day so that you can hustle to, you know, to do drugs. the last, what happened after that, I was charged with that, but I didn't go to court yet. So you remember, James, when we was at my house down on South 10th Street?
Yeah.
We went up there. The boys came up there to rob us, but they went somewhere else up on 16th Avenue, robbed the people up there, came back to my house after they did the robbery. And then I was charged with 9 counts of armed robbery, 10 counts of aid and abetting. But I never robbed the individual. Never seen the man or whatever in my life. So I went to prison for 4 years for that. They ran everything concurrent. I mean, together. They took the armed robbery and the heroin charges and ran it all together and gave me 4 years.
Yeah. So how long? How did you stop? Once you got out, how did you?
Okay, the question is. Tell you now.
Go ahead.
I laid up in the county jail. And down in North, I wouldn't eat. I wouldn't do nothing. I laid there for 39 days, detoxed myself in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
I detoxed right there in the prison, laying on my stomach for 39 days. I did like that. That's how long it took me to get that stuff out of my system. Once I got that out of my system, they sent me to a place called Bordentown. And I stayed down in Bordentown for 4 years. My wife that I had on the street, and this is what was key for me. Her friends told her, well, you know, Salim ain't going to be nothing but a drug addict when he come home, because that's been his forte ever since he's been in and out of jail. Well, I said, I got to prove them wrong.
Okay.
And what I did, I was in prison. I had friends in prison that were selling. They got more drugs in prison than they got on the street. He was selling drugs down there in prison. He offered me a steak sandwich and a bag of drugs. I said, I'll take the steak sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1975. I never, ever looked back at using heroin again, because I knew that I had to prove my ex-wife wrong, that she was not going to say that I was a drug addict, and that's why she left me.
So you was embarrassed and the stand stopped. you was almost embarrassed into staying stopped. You wanted to make a point, and it caught on.
I wanted to make a point. Yeah, you can say I was embarrassed.
Yeah,
you can say, man, that I mean, you can say what they can say whatever, but I knew then that I had to prove a point to myself first and foremost that I am better than what I thought I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know after I had survived Vietnam, I can survive this heroin stuff.
Mm-hmm. So now you stopped in 1975 and you just stayed stopped to present day. And I can attest to that because Salim is kind of... you know, he's the one that, showed me that recovery is possible, because I can tell you that brother was a dirty, he was one of what they call a dirty addict. You know, Salim was the type that, you know, he didn't mess around. When he was going to do something, he did it all the way. And so that's kind of, I hope that helps you out, Sambo, because you had another question, right? Oh, you asked me how did I stop and how did I stay stopped?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I went through about 7 rehabs in the VA. 7 times I relapsed. And I used for almost 30 years. I've been clean and sober now over 8,000 days. And Salim was kind of, he spearheaded that within our community, because he was the first one to stop using heroin and he was the first one to stay stopped for so long. Moved himself around. He even went to Egypt and learned Arabic at one point. He was a what did you do in the Marine Corps, Celine? Was you a tunnel rat or something like that?
I was a grunt, tunnel rat.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, man, I was what you would call, since I was in Alpha 1-1 in the Marines, my company would always take point on operation, and I was always point man.
Mm-hmm. And Sambo, let me interrupt you there for a minute, because Salim was, I want to see if I can help Sambo through this, because he obviously is still grieving. I know I would be grieving if I lost a son. I have a son right now, and I can't imagine. But Sambo, let me ask you this. Do you, and I know you're still trying to educate yourself about how to stop and how to stay stopped. There are probably people in your life and in your community who are doing exactly what your son died from. Would that be correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you're willing to join this fight that we're in. So let me kind of shift gears here for a minute. So we went from 1964-65, and we were exposed to heroin, Salim and I, and my community. And we are here in 2018, Sambo, and we're still fighting the same pestilence. You have any suggestions, Sambo, as to how we can kind of get on top of this thing? Because now it's a disease. When Salim and I started, it was moral imperfections. Like, we were junkies and drug addicts. Lock them up. That was the thing. Yeah. And they're not doing that now. I wonder why. Can you weigh in on that, Sambo? And then, Salim, I want you to take the same question. Why is it a disease now?
I think it's a disease now because it's spread so far into so many people. And usually a disease is something that is uncurable, or it can be curable, but most of the time it's uncurable. It can be maintained. I don't know. I'm trying to, like, you know, he was talking about that first feeling or whatever, trying to get that back. And, you know, I'm still not understanding, you know, why you want to do that, because, you know, I guess when you do heroin, you kind of nod out, you can't do anything, you know, and I just don't understand how you can want that feeling other than you're trying to escape some, you know, the struggles of life, per se.
I don't mean to cut you off, but see, that feeling is what led to the addiction of the heroin. What I mean by that is that after a week or two of using the drug, see, we didn't know. See, we were our neighborhood first drug users or junkies or whatever they wanted to call us back then, but they used to call us junkies. We were the neighborhood first monkey. The individual who introduced us to it didn't live in our neighborhood. So we didn't see nobody in our neighborhood as junkies or whatever. We became the first junkies. And how that happened is that after we got addicted, we didn't know that if you didn't have that drug, we didn't know if you didn't have it, you had your body craved like it never craved for anything else before. And it would hurt. So they didn't have rehab centers, and they didn't have nothing. I remember one time when my father died in 1971, I went to Columbia, South Carolina for his funeral. I had took me a week's supply of heroin with me down there in the car. Got down there, shot up with some of my friends down there in South Carolina. I ran out of drugs. And I'm going to show you something when you're saying about this. I ran out of drugs. I went to Columbia Hospital to get something for myself. They looked at me as if I was pure damn crazy. Because they didn't never know what a junkie was or what heroin was in Columbia, South Carolina back in the 1970s. They didn't know.
Well,
how this stuff became so addicted to people. Which when you want that, you're gonna need it, and your body says either you get it, or you suffer, or you're gonna have to do something to get it.
And even to the point of dying, you really don't care. So Sambo, I keep calling you Samson. I'm so sorry. Here's the thing. The point that I'm trying to make, Sambo, is that we as a society need to own up. We need to step up to the plate, because 1965, Salim and I shot heroin into our arm. And this is what I believe. You get a diminished capacity right away. So the heroin, that feeling becomes more beautiful to you than anything in the world, even unto death, because you don't even consider whether you're going to die or not. That happens to someone else. That's called a diminished capacity. My question is, why was it not a disease then, if it's a disease now? Because it's the same feeling. It's the same diminished capacity, you know, and there is an answer to that. What do you think, Celine? Why is it? Why is it a disease now?
I'm kind of confused why they're calling it a disease.
What's the confusion?
What's the definition of a disease?
Yeah, go ahead. Sambo, can you answer that? What's the definition of a disease? Yeah.
Definition of disease?
Mm-hmm. What? So when you describe a disease, you're talking about cancer. You're talking about diabetes. Yeah. These are things that can be managed, Sambo, because you mentioned earlier that you can manage it. A disease can be managed. It can't be cured, but it can be managed. Let me ask you, Celine, do you, you were a junkie, just like myself, according to society. We were junkies, right? So we had a disease,
right,
that was not recognized as a disease. But we're cured, I believe, Sambo, because I haven't used it, you know, and I know the feeling over and over and over and over and over again. But I haven't used heroin for over 8,000 days now. And what about you, Celine? You stopped in 1975, right? Did you do the same? Were you chasing the same feeling that I was chasing all those years? You was chasing the same feeling.
I'm sure I was chasing the same feeling.
And Sambo, your son was chasing it too, right? It's the same feeling.
Yeah.
It didn't change. It didn't change. But now,
your
son died from a disease, and my friends who died chasing the same thing died from what? What did they die from? A disease or not? In 1965 on up, was it a disease?
I'm looking at the definition of disease, and
what it says is
it's a pathological condition of a body part, an organ, or a system resulting from various causes such as infection, genetic defect, or environmental stress, and characterized by an identifiable group of signs or symptoms.
Hmm.
So looking at the definition of disease, I now see the connection and why it's called a disease. Because I guess when you're doing heroin, it's an effect.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay,
you know,
but then if heroin, like James is saying now, if today is called a disease, then why did when during our time they call it an addiction?
They call it, yeah, that's right. They call it moral imperfections. You was morally flawed.
We were considered reconsidered as an addict.
Yeah,
that means too. Then you would have to call alcohol a disease.
Yeah, they've been calling alcohol a disease for years, ever since it started. But heroin addiction was something else. And there's a lot of conversations. And I'm hoping here on Recovery Radio that we can, you know, get some people to join in, because now I know for sure that we can have multiple people on the phone at one time and have a really good, impactful conversation, because Sambo, I for one, you know, don't want to see your grandchildren and my grandchildren and my grandchildren's grandchildren having this conversation 20 or 30 years from now. because like I said, the conversation is the disease, the misery is the same as it was in 1965. And here we are in 2018. It's the same misery. And so we have to put boots on the ground. We have to stand up and we have to fight this pestilence, you know, by any means necessary, Sambo. And you and I, now, Salim, you're in Texas, right? You're soon to be coming our way a little closer. But Sambo and I, we're right here in Berkeley County together. And I'm hoping that he would join the team here at Recovery Radio in the community of Jefferson and Berkeley County so that we can get on top of this thing. Because somebody lied to the people of the country. You know, somebody lied or somebody turned a blind eye in 1965, because Salim and I, who were just children at the time, got a hold to this heroin. You know, I like to say that I went out for lunch that night on South 10th Street. I believe, Celine, it was in your basement, wasn't it? And it was your mother's basement that we first shot dope. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And went out to lunch. Went out to lunch in 1965. And I didn't get back. Celine came back off his lunch break in 1975. And I didn't get back to 1994. That's a long time, but it was not recognized as a disease, and so that's my point. It was a disease then, and so.
Yeah. Well, I think because back then they really didn't know much about it, the effects, the long term effects, and stuff, and therefore they didn't know what to call it. You know, when somebody doesn't know something, they call it. They'll give it a name, like saying junkies, because that's what you did.
Well,
they didn't have the support group to help get it out. And that's what we need here in Berkeley County, is some kind of outreach and some kind of support group to educate everybody else, like myself. You know, it's sad that, you know, I had to take a child's death to realize that, but you know, I don't know. Maybe that was his purpose in life. You know, to me, I believe everything has a purpose in life. You know, just like when you started off the podcast, you know, you said that it just didn't happen.
Right, by happenstance.
That we met each other. Right. There's a purpose.
Yeah, the purpose. And I believe, Sambo, that the purpose is that we should know the truth, and the truth shall make us free. In my community, African-American community, in the hood where heroin first came into my life, I think it was put there for a purpose, and that was to kill me and people like me, people that looked like me. And that, I believe, was the purpose. But here, I'm standing here, it didn't work. It worked on a lot of my friends and family, because the disease of addiction, especially to heroin, is a family disease. Am I correct in saying that, Sambo? It's a family disease.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how it affected your family in the long term, because we have just a few minutes left to talk. But I want you to. I'm trying to create a healing forest, is what I like to call it. Opportunity for everybody to heal.
It affected me because I'm a father. You know, I lost a son. Mm-hmm. It affected my daughter, my other son. You know, they lost a brother. And, you know, even his mother, you know, lost a child, grandmother. You know, it didn't just affect one person. It didn't just affect him. It affected everybody around him. You know, even friends that used to be friends that weren't friends, you know, and it's just, and nobody knows how to cope with it. Nobody knows how to deal with it. Even myself, I bottle everything up and then I let it out. So that's where, if you want to say it's a disease and an effect, it's a family effect. That's where the family effect comes into play.
Yes.
And
okay, Celine, you got the last word. Go ahead, Sambo. I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish.
No, that's fine. So you know, there you need more than support just for the person that's addicted. You need support and knowledge for people to cope with it and to help prevent it, you know, from somebody else.
Well, Salim and myself here and on Recovery Radio, we bring hope. We bring hope because we are evidence. We are the fact that this disease can be cured. You know, I don't believe in once an addict, always an addict. Are you an addict, Salim?
No. I'm glad you said that because I went to, I have to use AA meeting because I never been to an NA meeting. I went to an AA meeting. And everybody in the AA meeting says, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm a recovering addict. Hi, my name is so-and-so. I'm a recovering addict, and I got a God of my own choice." And it got to me, and I said, "Hi, my name is Salim." And you can hear the whisper saying, "See, he in denial." Not one person in there knew that I had not used drugs for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Not one person. But they said that I was in denial. I identified myself first and foremost as a man, as a Muslim, and I could not identify myself as an addict. Because I can't be a man or a Muslim and be an addict.
Right.
Can't be that.
That's right.
So I had to be who I'm supposed to be. And that's what people have to realize. Stop calling yourself an addict. Call yourself, if your son's name or whoever name is, call yourself who you are and say you are a man or a woman or a person or you are a nurse or a teacher. Mm-hmm. You're not an addict.
Right.
You're telling yourself you're an addict.
Yeah. And so
I
think.
Don't put a label on you that somebody else put on you. Put your own label on yourself. Identify who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, Sambo, I'm going to tell you, in the addiction and recovery culture, you're marketable if you're using. If you're using, then you're marketable. So they can market you because without.
Right.
Without people, without the product that these places use, like the counseling services and everything, without the people, there is no counseling service. Without crime, there is no policeman, you know. So you're marketable. Yeah. So I believe, Sambo, that in this particular time in the addiction culture, that heroin addiction has left the urban area and moved out to the suburbs because they have to find, because less of us in the urban area are dying or using heroin. And so they have to create an opportunity to have more of the product that they need to keep them viable. So you have to have a certain amount of people who are addicted to substance, and they had to find them somewhere. So heroin has made its way in a more powerful and positive impact into the suburbs. Okay. It's not working on the urbanites anymore. And so it moved out into the suburbs. And so I would imagine that your son, Sambo, was part of that movement. To get people, other people, they needed more of a product. So we have to be honest. We have to call a thing a thing. Somebody, something, some corporations. When you get an opportunity, look up this big pharmaceutical. I'm gonna ask my engineer to what's the name of the some of the companies that are marketing drugs, and not the pharmaceutical company, but there's another one. Okay, yeah, I'll get that name for you, Sambo, but I really would like you to kind of stay in touch with me, Sambo, because, you know, I think I can help you work through this. People like Salim and myself, we bring hope. We bring hope into this whole game thing that they're playing because they tried to kill us in 1965. And look, it didn't work, you know. And so for me to buy into the idea that once an addict, always an addict, or you're morally flawed, don't buy into that idea. You know, it was placed in my life specifically to kill me, and I believe.
You know what? Can I interject just one thing?
Yeah, we have a few minutes. Go ahead. A couple of minutes we have.
About that.
Mm-hmm.
I got two things I want to say. First, when I was using that heroin, I affected my family to the degree that they moved out of the house.
Yeah, I remember.
They moved out of the house. That's how bad off I had gotten. And I didn't know how bad off I had gotten. I didn't know that. But that is because I was so used to using that heroin. But I like to say that instead of saying you are an addict, just say you are an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you are abusing yourself and using drugs. Don't call yourself an addict.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it was a family of three brothers.
Yeah, the Fields, James,
Buddy, and Jimmy.
Yep.
All three of them passed from heroin.
Yeah.
All three of them.
Yeah.
Whole family, all the men passed from heroin. And we can go on. And tell you about all the people that we know, Hershey, Lonnie, and his sister. All three of those kids belonged to their parents. That was six people that we know, whole family, died from heroin.
Heroin addiction. So I'm going to have to stop you right there.
I'm trying to say to him is that he can get a grip on it,
mm-hmm.
and be strong and be a fighter and be a helper and try to be a more positive role in the life of the children that he has and help them all get over what is going on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and I have grandchildren here too, Sambo. Go ahead, Sambo. You got the last word.
I just wanted to add, you know, before my son passed, I looked at addicts as junkies, weak, everything like that. I had not much compassion about it. My son passed. It made me think. And, you know, my goal is to, you know, reach out to people and help them, you know, educate themselves before you lose a loved one.
Yes, right.
You know, and if we can battle it head on like that, I think we'll have more of an impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, like the whole marijuana thing, you know, like I knew my son was using, you know, smoking marijuana or whatever. And as a parent, I'm like, no, you can't do that. That's wrong. Okay. But, you know, in hindsight, I'm like, you know, if I'd been more supportive of him just smoking the marijuana, he wouldn't have wanted to go on to something stronger.
Yeah.
Because I could have been there more supportive.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you bring out. I'm going to have to cut you guys off right there. I really, really appreciate you calling in. I hope you call in every Tuesday at 9, from 9 to 10, and we can have this conversation and invite other people to join in, get on the line, send their questions to my email, which is BOYDBW@MSN.com. Or give me a call. You got the call-in number. I'm going to be sending this link out to you guys so you can share it with your families and so kind of get the conversation. I would love to have Sambo, you come back on, you and Salim, at another time, and we can pick it up right there. Okay.
Well, I'm so, more than willing.
Go ahead, Salim.
I say I'm more than willing to come back.
Okay. Listen, we're gonna,
next week.
Mm-hmm, I got a closing song that I know you're really going to like, Salim. This is one of our favorites from the pizza parlor. Hey, Sambo, thanks you so much, man. And give me a call. Here we go.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
I will do that.
Listen up. You like that, Celine? And that was specifically for you, Sambo.
We'll be right back.
All right, I'm going to cut you guys off now. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.